Thanks for listening to the Project Login Podcast. The Project Login Podcast features Mainers working in technology jobs across the state. It is meant to be a career exploration tool and follows an informational interview format. Folks from across Maine will be featured, from CIOs, software developers, to business analysts, and more. The goals of the podcast are to expose listeners to various technology jobs at Maine companies by people who do the work, and to raise awareness of education and training pathways into those careers, and raise aspirations of young Mainers to pursue high-wage, in-demand tech careers. Today's guest on the podcast is Ken Grady. Hi, Ken.
Hey, how are you today? Thanks for having me.
Good. Thanks for being here. So we're going to get right into it. The first question is, tell me where you work.
So I work at IDEX Laboratories, and many folks listening might be familiar because it's a large Maine company, headquartered just outside of Portland in Westbrook, Maine, and it's been around, founded almost 40 years ago now. It's one of the largest publicly traded companies in Maine, although about two-thirds of our employees globally live outside of Maine, still about a third, or about 2,500 to 3,000 folks in Maine work at IDEX. And I've been there for about 6 years now.
Awesome. And what's your role?
I am the CIO, which, if you don't know what that is, it's okay. You're like my mom. It means I run enterprise technology and software for the company, how we run our business, how we connect with our customers, how we grow and go to market with our products. Our products are really focused on animal health and well-being. We're a diagnostics and software company. So that means that when you bring your dog or cat to the vet and they run tests to understand, is it healthy? Is it sick? How will they proceed from a treatment perspective to support the health and well-being of your pet? That's our business, is the diagnostics. We also do other testing in water and dairy. Is this milk safe to drink? Is this water safe to drink? About 2 billion people around the world every day drink water that's been tested by an IDEX product, in fact. So it's a fantastic purpose and company with a global scale impact, headquartered right here in Maine.
Cool. How did you get to Maine? How did you get to this role?
I sometimes ask myself that question. You started off by saying, you know, this podcast is talking to Mainers, and for listeners, they're going to very quickly figure out that I'm not from here. I'm from away. But I moved here.
Mainer now.
I'm a Mainer now, and we love it. I moved here just over 6 years ago. I had worked in technologies in a number of different companies, and including really for the last 20 years, I've been working in life sciences, human health, vaccines, and diagnostics. I kind of got there through an odd route, but the short version of that story is I'm married to a scientist, and years ago, long ago and far away, when the dot-com sector went boom and I was working in high tech, I looked at what she was doing every day, trying to, you know, cure cancer and like create a vaccine for HIV and smallpox. I was like, hey, that sounds really interesting. I think I'm going to go work at life sciences. And honestly, I found that I really loved it. And never looked back. And I got a call several years ago from this company in Maine working in animal health. And, you know, I answered the call and came to Maine and got to know the team and the environment and the states, and realized very quickly that we loved it. It fit us very well. And before you know it, we were packing our stuff and moving to Maine.
Cool. And the rest is history, as they say.
Yep.
So, you didn't tell me if you went to college or had any post-secondary training. I'm curious about that pathway.
So I enrolled in computer engineering at Georgia Tech. And I was there for about a year and a half. And I was not a great student, quite honestly. And at a certain point, you know, my counselors and I met, and they suggested that I pursue my academic success elsewhere. They were very polite. You know, I was young. I actually entered college at 17, and I didn't have the discipline and the focus at that time to really buckle down. I knew I was very interested in technology, computer engineering, but I had a challenge finding good study habits, let's say, back then. And so I actually took a left turn and went and joined the Army. And I became a translator. I actually studied Arabic, and I was an Arabic translator for 5 years, active duty in the Army. This was back in the mid-90s. And when I got out, and during that time, I met and married, by the way, my now wife that I mentioned earlier. And this is actually, it is all part of the story, because at the time when we got married, I said, hey, if you follow me, you know, because I'm in the Army and I don't know where I'm going to go, then when we get out of the Army, I'll turn around and follow you wherever you want to go. And she grew up in San Francisco, and she wanted to move back to the San Francisco area after we got out of the Army. And that was 1998, and which was a great time to go to San Francisco and work in technology. So I went, when I left the Army, I went back into technology, got a role on a help desk supporting library systems around the world. Very, very interesting library systems around the world, and working nights actually as kind of a help desk junior system administrator. And that was it. I kind of went into technology. So no, I don't have a 4-year degree. I managed to kind of pursue my career and learn technology. And I've done just about every job in IT except network engineer. I don't understand what those guys do. I just know that I blame the network anytime I have problems. I'm responsible for the network. I have a great team of network engineers, and they use small words and bright colors when they're talking to me to explain what they do. But that was it. No, so I'm living proof that there are alternative paths into technology for sure.
Yeah, they also have translator skills, just not
Arabic. They do. Yeah, exactly. They have to translate for me. Yeah.
So as you got your foot in the door and started working your way up sort of into different technology roles, did you pick up any special certifications or credentials? Like, and you don't have to. Sometimes they're not necessary for the job, but.
I've done a lot. I mean, I'm a continuous learner, and so I continue to take a lot of courses along the way. It depends. I mean, over the course of my career, gosh, you know, I just finished a Python boot camp. It's been a long time, let me be clear, since I've like actively coded in anger and delivered any, like, you know, code into production. But it's, I find it both interesting and important for me to understand. You know, I took the AWS certified engineer course, for example, because as we were shifting to the cloud and some of these technologies, I wanted to learn about, you know, kind of what these look like, what my team, you know, when they talk to me around things. These other courses, you know, I never got my project manager. I did a lot of work as a project manager. I never got PMP certified, but I've taken a lot of courses on it and done a lot of reading. The certification is a useful tool for sure, because it communicates to employers where you have spent time studying and learning. And so I look to those things when I'm talking to talent. But then I take, you know, then the next step is obviously to have a conversation around what you took from that certification, what you learned from that certification, and why it's applicable to the role. And so it's always useful, you know, it's a great shorthand to, you know, to start the conversation, but then it's always be prepared to then talk about how to apply that to the role. That's what I find.
Yeah. Or tell me about a project that you did when you, after your certification.
Yeah, that's a really interesting one, because I'll talk to people about that and, you know, tell me about a project you did. And I was like, well, I'm not really a project manager. And I'm like, you know what? Everybody has been involved in projects. Like, it could be a school project, it could be a learning project, it could be something you delivered over the course of a summer. It could be a construction project. Like, there's a lot of transferable skills. I worked in construction for a time kind of growing up as well. And there's a lot of transferable skills to planning the logistics, thinking about inventory, thinking about what you need to bring, you know, to the job site. You know, how did you sequence the work? Because I'm just talking about a construction example. Right. You know, because, you know, the plumber, I did trim carpentry, and the trim carpenter has to be like at the tail end of things, and certain things have to be there before you can do the trim. You know, lots of great examples that are transferable in terms of logical thinking that sometimes people might not think of.
Yeah. So I'm curious what a typical day or week might be for a chief information officer.
Yeah, I actually do think a lot about that. You know, I probably spend about 50% of my time, I would say, inwardly focused, you know, working with my team, working with project teams, working with operations, you know, infrastructure. I probably spend about a third of my time focused outside of IT and the rest of the company, working with the rest of IDEX, you know, talking to our commercial team or our R&D team about a product launch and how we're going to go to market and how we're going to support our customers. Maybe it's with facilities and planning a new site or an expansion or an acquisition, who knows. And then the remainder of my time I spend outside the company. And that's important. You know, I spend a lot of time, I mean, I'm on the board of Educate Maine, and we spend a lot of time talking about talent pipeline. I'm on the board of software startup company that's based out of Boston, and we talk about, you know, the strategy there, or on advisory boards, or talking to vendors or other things. And really, again, that's part of how I stay, I don't know, fresh and in touch with what trends are emerging. And this year, because it's been the year of COVID, I spent a lot of time talking to other CIOs about how they're dealing with and supporting their employees, their colleagues, and their customers through this time, and learning from one another, sharing what we learned. I had a fascinating, absolutely great conversation with the head of IT for Hannaford's. They're a little bit differently organized because they're part of a conglomerate, but Ian Webb, great guy. And I've talked to him a few times during, over the course of the last, you know, 6 months. And talk about, like, you know, frontline responder, essential workers, having to think very differently about deploying technology in this time. You know, Hannaford's is like he explained to me the mystery of the toilet paper shortage, which was not that we didn't have enough toilet paper. We have plenty of toilet paper. But, you know, we have a lot of toilet paper going unused because it's sitting in office buildings. But it was about it's like playing Tetris to get toilet paper on the truck. Because if you fill up the truck with toilet paper, then you can't put any zucchini on the truck. And you need to make sure there's zucchini in the store too. And so it was just like supply chain. It was all technology driven because we were mapping it out through IT and understanding what's being used on the shelves of the grocery store, and thinking about what's going to be, you know, the demand for the following week, and how are we going to fill the trucks to get it out to the grocery stores. So again, this has been a time when IT and technology and CIOs and our teams have all been front and center in enabling businesses to continue. And so it's been great to be able to share that over the last few months with colleagues.
Yeah, and hearing what they were doing. Yeah, that's a great story. You gave it away. If I'm going to have him on the podcast, you already previewed it.
He's awesome. You'll love it. Yeah. He's got a lot more stories to tell. Don't worry. He's a really fascinating guy. I love it. I learned so much about the grocery store supply chain talking to that guy.
That's awesome. Tell me what you like best about your job.
You know, one of the things I love about being in IT, and I've said this before, I say this every year, this is the best time to be in IT. This is not the IT that I grew up in, quite frankly. It's far better than that. It's far more interesting, you know, both because I love being in a role where I get to work with every part of the organization. You know, today I'll be working with, well, this morning I started my day talking to our operations and manufacturing guys. And we're talking about supply chain planning, you know, back to that. You know, later in the day, I'll be talking to R&D, to research and development, and because data is a big part of how we deliver our products to market. I might be talking to customer support, customer service later, to our commercial team, to our marketing team, to HR, you know, about the employee experience, as well as, you know, to marketing about the customer experience. And I love that because it's never boring. There's always stuff to learn and do and to have an impact on, right? Because as CIO and as IT, part of our job is to describe the art of the possible. What can you do with technology to improve the lives of our customers? And in our case, at IDEX, to really improve the lives of the pet owner and ultimately the pet, right? Because we're actually helping ensure that they live longer and happier and healthier lives as a part of our families, which is amazing. And as I said, it's never been a better time to be in IT because the technology is more capable than it's ever been before. It's more powerful. It's more flexible. We can actually build solutions that fit on your phone, that sits in your pocket in a way that we just couldn't even have imagined 10 years ago. I mean, hell, this whole COVID, like, you know, the fact that we were able to pivot our business and, or if you're in a different industry, you know, if you're an educator, to pivot learning, if you're in government, to pivot you know, services, if you're in healthcare, the way that we deliver healthcare, it's just incredible. 5 years ago, even, we couldn't have done this through COVID, not in this way. And that is just, when you step back from it and you think about the promise and the power of technology and enabling our day-to-day lives, it's incredible. And to get into it, and it's easier to pick up in some ways than it's ever been before too. I mean, you can be, my daughter is a freshman at university now studying computer science, and you know, her ability to program an app on the iPhone and, like, you know, start to finish in a couple of weeks. I just couldn't have even fathomed that several years ago. Just absolutely incredible. So it's a great place to be. And it's a skill you can take from industry to industry, job to job. in a way that you can always make a difference. And that's why I do what I do.
That's awesome. And that's super positive. And you can tell you're really passionate about it. I'm curious what problems you might have to deal with. So are there problems that pop up that you have to put out fires for?
Oh gosh, yeah. You know, Murphy's Law is as true as ever. And in technology, and this is kind of good about where we have some design principles we talk a lot about from an IT perspective, designing for failure. Because if it can break, it will break. And we've all seen that, right? Our computer crashes after we've been writing some document, you know, and it's like, oh my God. And designing for failure, you know, save early, save often. You save that stuff up to the cloud and whatever. And cloud operating at cloud scale is very different than what we used to have to rely on everything in our data center on site. So you can design differently. But there's about 50, a little bit more than half of, for example, our IT budget is on operations, spent on operations, keeping the lights on, keeping the internet working, keeping the phones ringing, answering help desk calls, you know, providing storage, all those kind of core, the network piece, that mystery that I mentioned before, all that core piece that we mentioned. Cybersecurity is a growing area of focus, of course, it has been for years. And, you know, risk management, it's all about risk management from that, training people on what phishing attacks look like, what ransomware is, what to do about it. It's a really interesting area, an interesting part of the discipline, but it's a key area of focus that's going to just continue to grow because we know the bad guys won't stop being bad just because there's a pandemic, for example. So we have to think about that. And then there's project work, you know, delivering new capabilities and making choices. I spend a lot of my time, you know, really helping to prioritize and making choices because we have more ideas than we have hours in the day. And so you've really got to think about where does it make sense to spend our time and energy and deploy our resources and capabilities, you know, to that new technology. How much change can our customer take at once? How do we plan that out, for example, in a thoughtful way? And then how do you layer or put together the puzzle pieces of different technology options to create the right outcome? Because we have a lot of different ways to solve problems these days. And you want to think about ways that if you're going to live with a technology for 2, 3, 4 years, you want to live with one. You want to make the right choices up front so you can continue to build on it.
So you mentioned those choices, those decisions, and those aren't made in a vacuum or in a silo by yourself. So you talked a little bit about some of the other teams that you work with. And just so you know, I did already interview an operation excellence engineer from IDEX. Her name is Jessica.
Oh.
And so she explained a little bit about decisions as well. So tell me how those get made.
So, you know, we don't make decisions in a vacuum at IDEX. You know, I'm part of the management committee at IDEX. And so we have the opportunity, I have the opportunity to work with my colleagues across different functions when we have decisions to make. And often, you know, as an example, we'll decide we have to think about when we're going to launch a new product or a new service or a new technology out to our customers. And we'll look at the roadmap and say, okay, where does that intersect with other things that we have going on? And what do we need to do about that? Because it does become a physics problem. Two objects can't occupy the same space at the same time. So we'll talk about the trade-offs. And we make that decision really together by looking at which one gives most value, you know, upfront. So it becomes math, right? So to carry on the science, you do the math and you show your work, right? Because sometimes you have differences of opinion, right, in the room about which one's more valuable. But you show your work and then you have a conversation, a very objective conversation about, you know, what to do and how to approach it. But what I love about a place like IDEX is, you know, yeah, we're a big company, but we're not so big that we can't just get ourselves into a room together or a virtual room, a Zoom or a WebEx, and have that discussion and be prepared with data. As you would expect, as a diagnostics company, we're very, very data focused. We're very, you know, kind of show us the math. Focused in making those decisions, very logical. And I appreciate working with colleagues that approach it the same way.
Cool. What is something that challenges you?
Oh my gosh, where to start? You know, the pace of technology has just accelerated. And I mentioned before that I'm always trying to keep up and trying to learn. Not that I, you know, expect to master everything. I'm blessed that I get to work with a lot of people that are smarter and more educated than I in their various domains and expertise. But I do like to try and stay at least abreast of the trends. And I, you know, it's just gotten harder as the years have gone by. And partly that's because I've had less time focused on it than I used to. So that's my own personal challenge. But it is a challenge to stay up, you know, with kind of all the trends. I also, and it's partly because I'm fascinated by it and I continue to work in life sciences, you know, the scientific side of what we do as well is really, really interesting to me. And again, the technology there is advancing. I mean, you know, it was great. IDEXX actually launched a COVID test over the summer for humans as well. And we drew on our deep diagnostic expertise to be able to help contribute to the global health crisis that we've had. And understanding, and I actually had a background in some of that, understanding how PCR works and explaining that and translating that to my team was useful. So I find it very useful to keep up with that. But that translation is a very, very useful, I found a very useful skill over the years.
And cool that you had an opportunity to work on a COVID test.
I know. You know, it is awesome. I guess when thinking about those two things, just to answer your question about what challenges me. Yeah, time management is my biggest challenge, is kind of how do I fit everything I need to do in the day? And, you know, staying ahead of that is probably the biggest thing that I have to work on day to day.
That's good advice. What advice do you have for a young person looking to get into IT field?
Number one is being open to and being planful about continuous development, continuous learning. You're never going to stop learning in this field. For most of us, I hope that's a good thing, but I know that it can be somewhat intimidating. But it also comes with the other side of that is nobody expects you to know everything getting into this field because there's always going to be something new to learn. The technology comes along. I saw a job description once that asked for, I don't know, like 12 years of Salesforce.com experience or something, you know, something crazy. I'm like, the company isn't that old. That's impossible, right? So you need to be willing to take what you've learned, build on that, you know, really apply yourself to continue. In fact, I'll tell you a story about my first job interview. You asked me about when I got out of the army and went back into technology. I went to this interview at this company, Innovative Interfaces Inc. III.com, still in existence, still one of the best library systems company around. And I went on this interview for this junior sysadmin role, and I knew some stuff, but I didn't know a lot of stuff. And they gave me a test, actually. They actually asked me to describe some Unix scripting commands. And I probably missed about 40%, something like that. I got more than half right, but I missed a lot of them. I didn't know a lot of them. And I knew that I had. And what I did after the interview was I went home and I actually figured out what the rest of the answers were and I sent an email. We still had email back then. We did have that in 1998. But I sent an email to the hiring manager and I said, you know, I know I didn't get it all right, but I went back and I figured out the rest of it. Here's the rest of it. And I'll tell you that he told me later that got me the job because I demonstrated my willingness to go figure it out. Not that I had 100% mastery, but that I was willing to go back and learn it and figure it out. And that willingness will carry you a long way in this field.
Yeah. I will. You've talked a little bit about IDEXX's culture. Could you share a little bit about what makes IDEXX company culture so unique?
Yeah, you know, I've worked at a lot of places, big and small. I worked for a large 150,000 person pharmaceutical. I've worked for small startup companies. And IDEXX is just this magical blend of somewhere in between where we still have that entrepreneurial spirit, where this can do, go get things done. And I think there's a little bit of Mainer in it, where it's just you roll up your sleeves and you help one another get stuff done. But we're also, you know, it's a large enough company where we have the resources to really go fast in a lot of areas and be, you know, deliver on that innovation. But, you know, we still keep, so one of our core values is we contribute to the communities of which we are a part. IDEXX is very much a part of and supporter of programs like Educate Maine, right? Where we're really dedicated to developing a talent pipeline. To, of course, we partnered with the state of Maine in bringing the COVID test to market and to support and amplify the testing capacity of the state that we live in and we're headquartered in. And I love that passion that so many people bring. And of course, being IDEXX, you know, lots of my colleagues, including myself, are animal lovers. So we have that bond that we all share together. And it's just, it's a purpose you can get behind. It's a purpose, a lot of, you know, even for those folks outside of Maine and outside of our industry that have not heard of IDEX, as soon as I start to describe what it is we do, you know, testing fluffy puppies and healthy kittens and safe drinking water, everybody gets it immediately. And I love that. I love working for a company that just has that very clear purpose and common cause.
I'm going to pivot a little bit and find out if there's internships or job shadows or other opportunities for students at IDEX.
We have a very strong internship program at IDEX, and it's something that I'm really proud of. It's something that I really am a big supporter of. We have a number of interns every year in IT and in our software development and R&D and all kinds of areas. And it's become, or has historically been, a very rich source of talent for us. We have interns that return year after year. And in fact, if an intern comes back more than twice, you know, two or more times for following times, I think the placement rate is something over 50%. You know, it ends up turning into a full-time role. And we have those that rotate around. We have those that go on to other jobs, other industries, other states, and that's great. In fact, this year with COVID, we, like everything else, we adapted our internship program. And we had our first fully remote interns. A student from Bowdoin actually was interning with one of our software development teams in my team. And it was great to see kind of how we could pivot and support it. So it's something we've just grown over time. We have, you know, several dozen interns across IDEX every summer. And we have outside of summers as well. We have internships and job shadows and apprenticeships in Europe and other kinds of models that we've adapted.
I would love to know what your favorite place in Maine is.
Wow, what a tough question. You know, as I mentioned, when I first came up to Maine to interview with IDEX, I had been to Maine exactly one time before, and that was to drive through it on my way to Prince Edward Island. I didn't know anything about Maine. I was like, hey, who lives in Maine except like moose and the occasional stray Canadian? I don't know. And as I mentioned, I came up to IDEX, I was interviewing, I was like, wow, this is a really cool company. And they said, yeah, bring your family up. And we spent some time looking around. I live in Gorham. I love it. Bought an old farmhouse. You know, it's a continuous project, but I love where we live. I love Southern Maine and the access we have to Portland and to seafood and the restaurants and all that good stuff. But, you know, I am a Mainer now, right? And I know the natives will disagree, but I'm a Mainer. Yeah. And so we bought a camp because that's what you do. And when I said camp, we bought some woods in the middle of nowhere. It's in Sumner, Maine, and which is about an hour and a half north of here in the middle of nothing. It's halfway between Poland and Rumford. It's like there's nothing up there. It's on a river, and we go up and we go camping. And we built a, you know, take our tents and stuff. And one day I'm going to build a cabin up there. But I love inland Maine as well, and the forest and the hikes and the trails and stuff that we do and get out in the woods and nature. And that's what I love about Maine is it doesn't matter what season it is. If you like the outdoors, there's always something to do. On the coast, in the mountains, go skiing. There's that mud season there in like April that I'm not a huge fan of. But other than that, it's great. I love all parts of Maine.
Yeah, so you're not unlike anybody else that can't pinpoint just one place. Everybody likes different parts of Maine, and depending on whether you're in the mountains or the ocean or somewhere in between. Thank you so much for your time today and being on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to talk. And I'm glad if there's any follow-up questions or things that people shoot you, send them over my way and I'd be happy to follow up and answer cool. When I can.
Yeah, we'll put some show notes in there and lead them to the career page at IDEX, and then we'll follow up. Thank you.
Have a great day.
You too.